Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
One of the things Swamiji said, I'm sure I've brought it up before, but it becomes more and more real to me as we go along in our life. He said, in the end, your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. That's what it is. Your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. There's another verse that is quoted in Shankara's commentary on the Vishnu Sahasranama. Where I forget the source of it. I remember the quote, but I forget the source. I can look it up. If anybody has a Vishnu Sahasranama, I can find it for you. This is the greatest sadhu, the most auspicious, the greatest puja to Bhagawan that there is when you worship Ishwara in the form of all beings. It's the same. Your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. Mm-hmm. Say you separate Ishwara from the creation. But you don't mean to do that, especially if you're a Vedantin. You certainly don't mean to do that. But we can do that where we have a lot of shraddha and love. And I'm just talking for myself. I don't exclude myself from any of this because we all have to grow into this continually. You can have tremendous shraddha in Ishwara, you can pray to Bhagawan, you can do bhajans, and you can do puja, and we can all do all of these things, which I think are very helpful, actually. Very helpful. But that has to translate, that shraddha, that devotion, that puja, has to translate in the end toward our attitude toward all beings, no exceptions. Any exception is a suffering for us. Not for them too, probably, because everybody would like to be treated for who they actually are. So would we. I would like to be treated for who I actually am. And actually, I am Ishwara. So please treat me as such. Yeah. That's the truth. We're all ignorant of that truth. And so that truth is superimposed upon our body, mind, sense organs. And so, please treat me as I deserve to be treated, as the Lord. And I'm talking about me here, this body, mind, sense organ. Here, we really get into trouble. That's narcissism. That's what we call narcissism. I am Bhagawan. Even though you don't say that, that's the way we can relate to the world. That's a person who has a narcissistic personality disorder, you know. But there's a reason that there can be a narcissistic personality disorder. It's because of who you actually are, who all beings actually are, all the animals, all the plants, all human species, all the aliens that there are in all the Devatas and all the ones in Naraka. There is no exception. You know, that's who they are at the core. Is Ishwara? Is this by Ishwara? I mean Brahman. The self who has this Maya Upadhi that displays in every way imaginable, you know, with all of the punya and all of the papa, all of the dharma, all of the adharma. It's all possible in this infinite display of creation. But at the core of it all, there is only Brahman. There's only the self. So there is nothing here. I'm talking to you on different levels. Everything will become clear. If somebody's a little bit more new here than other people, so don't worry about it. It'll circle around. But I'm just going to be going on different levels for different people. So in a nutshell, that is our sadhana. That not just the deep, deep recognition of that fact in reference to myself, the little ones inside, and to all beings. And that's what it is. That's why Swamiji said, you know, I've worked really hard for this knowledge. And that part of it, gaining that type of integration of your knowledge, you know, is kind of it's very natural. It's very natural for one who has knowledge to be on that trajectory. But it's also very natural for the unconscious and the mind to really resist. Because as you gain this knowledge, right, there's a lot of pushback for all of the complexes inside and all of the habits that we have and all of the resentments and hurts and that we have toward the other, you know, all the way coming up. All of those things have to slowly be dropped off because they're not worth it. My mind wants just to be one with Bhagavan. That's what we want. This mind, body, sense organs has to surrender to Bhagavan, to Ishwara in the end. Because, I mean, you're surrendering to the reality of what this body, mind, sense organs is. It is just one with Ishwara. It's a part to the whole. You know, it doesn't have this body, mind, sense organs. It's not at all separate from the total karma. The prarabdha karma that we say, the karma that causes you to take this birth, to live out this life, that prarabdha karma is nothing but a slice of Ishwara. It's all, your whole experience here in this life and in all lives is only the experience of Ishwara. Swamiji said it so beautifully because someone had asked, you know, Swamiji, I am being so limited, upadi so limited, and Ishwara is infinite. So how can I really experience Ishwara? It's a good question. How can I really experience Ishwara? I'm just experiencing this minuscule little part. How can I experience Ishwara? So what he said was, every vritti is Ishwara. Every thought modification, every emotion, every experience is Ishwara. There's nothing that is not Ishwara, so whatever you experience is Ishwara. You know? If you're talking about having an experience of the whole infinite Ishwara Swarupa, the whole infinite form of Ishwara, well, then you have to gain Bhagavan's, Krishna's favor, as Arjuna did, and maybe he'll give you that experience. But that would be some sort of a siddhi. That's not something that we can count on having an experience like that. No. You don't need that. All of the laws that govern the entire creation govern this part of the creation. All of the relationships, everything. The whole order of the creation is to be found in every part of the creation. You know, it's not a separate order. It's the same order. This is a wonderful thing to understand also. Say we have 9 lokas up, 9 worlds up. And more that you get to abide in as you transmigrate because of punya, greater amounts of punya. And then there's 9 worlds down, which you really get to enjoy when there's papa. But you always come back. Either way, you always come back. But what's to understand there is that is part, this loka, all of the lokas, all of the dimensions, inside and outside, are all part of one infinite order. There's nothing apart from it. You know? An easy, I think, but very simple way to appreciate the simple truth of it is just to look at your dream. There's no part of the dream that is not your dream. There's no part of the dream that is not included in your dream. It's obvious, right? There's no part of an imagination that's not included in your imagination. Every single part is held together as part to the whole. It's only one thing. And so our appreciation of Ishwara, though we have our Ishta Devatas, and we have our pujas and our chanting and our bhajans, all of which, I think, create a beautiful bhava insight. They bring Ishvara, you know, they bring that devotion and that love and that purity inside. But how we do what we do with that is spread it outside. It can't just be inside, right? It can't just be myself and Ishvara, like God in heaven. It's not good. Ishvara is not God in heaven. Ishvara is God everywhere. One of Swamiji's students once, this was in 1972, Swamiji asked them a question: what is different about Hinduism from other religions? It's a question something like that. And Anantanand Rambachan, who's written a few books for us, he wrote Accomplishing the Accomplished, and another, the Limits of Scripture. Some books I usually give that to all my students. It's really, really pretty. And the Advaita Worldview. He's Swamiji's student. He's a professor somewhere in the Midwest somewhere. So he was a young brahmachari then. Maybe he was in his mid-20s, and he holds up his hand in this big auditorium in Puai, near Bombay. Swami Chinmayananda's ashram. He stands up and he says, Swamiji, in Hinduism, it's not that there's one God, it's that there's only God. And Swamiji loved that answer. There's only God. Right? There's one self, one God. And that's true for we're all included in that. In that we are all Ishvara. That's the fact of it. You can say, well, you're not really Ishvara, you're a part of Ishvara. Right. Okay. You're a part of Ishvara. That means you're Ishvara. You're Ishvara. Every being is Ishvara. And so our sadhana is that aradhanam, and that's the word that they use. You know, toward all beings, our aradhana, our worship is a worship. Our greatest worship of Ishvara is that worship for all beings. So when we talk about this knowledge, gaining self-knowledge, what is really the knowledge of the Vedanta, of the Upanishads? For you to say, what is it exactly? Probably the best way to say it is in the Mahavakya. But the clearest Mahavakya that encapsulates everything is I am Ishvara. That is this knowledge. Now, to say I am Ishvara is to recognize that there is nothing but Ishvara. It's not recognizing I myself am Ishvara. No, it's that this self that is Brahman. If you look at the Mahavakyas, the I am Ishvara is a Mahavakya. There's many, many Mahavakyas. But one is, you know, this consciousness is Brahman. This consciousness is Brahman. This very Atma, this consciousness is Brahman. Prajnanam Brahman. Prajnanam Brahman. That Pramasi, you are that. That's another Mahavakya. You are that. Means you. So the best way that when we unfold this Mahavakya, Tat Pramasi, when we unfold this Mahavakya, you are that. You, the one who takes yourself to be a jiva, you are actually tat, that, Ishvara. You, O jiva, are Ishvara. That's a Mahavakya. It's like saying, you, O wave, are the ocean. And the first thing, I'm not the ocean. The wave would say, I'm not the ocean, I'm just a little wave. I'm not the ocean, I'm part of the ocean. Right? If I say, you are Ishvara, I'm not Ishvara, I'm just a limited being here in this creation. You are Ishvara. What does that mean? It's on different levels. On the level of identity, right, the self that you are is the self in all beings, is the very self which Ishvara is. The beauty of that is that in terms of your body, mind, sense organs, this presence is nice and wet, by the way. this presence of the self, right? But give a good shake. Bless us. Yes. Oh, you're not so wet now. He came into my room and he was very wet. He wanted to get on the bed.
No.
Not now. Okay. So, this recognition that I am Ishwara, that starts with this Driksha Viveka, you know, where I have to recognize that this self that I am is the self in all beings, is the self of Ishwara. But then I have to recognize, you can't stop there, because you can just, okay, Vedanta, let me just check out here. No checking out. There's no checking out. There's no reason for any checking out. But that means I do see all beings as Ishwara. And when I don't, that's my sadhana. Of course, I'm not going to immediately see. It's not that I'm going to immediately see all beings are Ishwara, because I've had beginningless lifetimes of not seeing that. Beginningless lifetimes of seeing myself just as a jiva. But when the point here that I'm getting to, and that I kind of want to stress before we really get into these texts, is that when we divide the Vedanta into these two prongs of Upayanishta and Upayanishta. The Upayanishta, remember, is the means of knowledge, the Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, the exposing myself to this Pramana so that I see, that I really understand this knowledge, that I understand, deeply see, recognize the truth of, that this self, I recognize my own being, and I recognize my own being, this self, in relationship to all beings. I recognize myself as the self in all beings. I recognize that this being, I recognize this being as differentiated from the body, mind, sense organs, the limitless nature of my being, the changeless nature of my being, that my being is the very ananda or the fullness that I have always sought, but have projected over and over onto the world. Let me have this. Like saying, let me have myself over here so I can be happier. Let me have myself over here so I can be happy. We don't recognize that this is myself. This is myself. This is all Maya. There's nothing here but myself. It's like I hold up a pot. I want the pot. I don't want the clay. But there's only clay. No, but I still want the pot. I want the pot. I want that pot. You know, Swamiji would always tell the graham cracker story. And I don't know if in Sweden or in the Europe you have graham crackers, the animal crackers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody gave one student gave me a beautiful box of animal crackers. It came in a nice little animal cracker cage, you know, little cardboard cage. And yeah, the animal cracker story. Used to tell it in great depth, you know. The mother brings to a bunch of her children and their friends some animal crackers. And she holds out one, it's the giraffe. And everybody holds, I want the giraffe, I want the giraffe. She gives one the giraffe and tries to find it. There's only a few giraffes. But she pulls out another, there's a dog. I want the dog, I want the dog. No, I want the dog, I want the dog. So she gives the dog to somebody and somebody says, can I have a dog too? What about the giraffe? Well, here's a horse. I want the horse. Okay, I want the horse. What about an elephant? I want the elephant. I'd rather have the horse. It goes on and on and on and on and on. Nobody says, just give me the graham cracker. It's a very funny thing. That's our situation, you know? I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. When actually the substance, the very being, the clay of the pot that you're asking for is your own being. There's nowhere to go. There's no need to go anywhere. You already are what you seek. So, now, that knowledge, that recognition is not a full recognition if I'm just recognizing my own self, my own being, in reference to this body, mind, sense organs. I've done that viveka. There's many prakriyas. There's many teaching methodologies that will take me to that recognition, you know, differentiating my the conscious being from this body, mind, sense organs, and recognizing a silent, beautiful, non-threatening sanctuary inside. And so my mind can always dive into, as it says in the Taittiriya Upanishad, you know, a prayer to let me just dive into the sanctuary of my being. So many words it says, you know. So we can get there without too much difficulty, actually. It's very step by step by step. And I can actually, you know, as a therapist, give a lot of that to my clients without really getting into Vedanta. Just to recognize that one who is always present. And that's not Vedanta. That's the first step. That's not the whole truth. That truth is there as the truth is there to be found in every Namarupa, every place, everywhere in the entire creation, and every part of it, that truth is there. But in each jiva can have a little dose of that, you know, recognize different practices of samadhi, different practices of pranayama, different practices of meditation. You can have moments of beautiful absorption, of non-dual absorption, where you recognize just your own being. But then, when you open your eyes and come out into the world, you know, that's different. You know, that's where your knowledge has to really be integrated, and where this upayanishta, you know, the antakarna shuddhi, the means for gaining, to living that knowledge, for knowing how to integrate that knowledge with your unconscious, your habits, the adharmas, how to deal with how to gain titiksha. Titiksha is how to be fine with the opposites. All of the opposites, like heat and cold. I need it to be cold so that snow will be bright so that I can ski. And so I'm waking up waiting for that cold day, and we're all going to go. And instead of a cold day, I get a warm day with melting snow. And the whole thing is totally ruined. Okay, so that's going to be who I am at that moment. Everything is ruined. It's really look forward for the day. It did not. What a waste of time. What a total waste of time. You know? So, but we're habituated to needing to fulfill a situation so that we can be happy. We're habituated to that reality, quotes, from beginningless time. And so even though your mind gains an understanding, more of a personal, direct, immediate understanding of myself, the conscious being that is innermost, the pratyekatma, it takes a deeper understanding to realize that this self, by the very nature of yourself, of the self that you have directly, immediately recognized, that self can't but be the self of all beings and the self of Ishwara. It can't but be. Because in the recognition of this pratyagatma, this innermost self, there is no time. Time is objectified. Time belongs to the creation. Space belongs to the creation. It's objectified. There's a subject-object relationship there. You know? And so it's not, it doesn't apply to you. This body exists in the creation. Your mind exists in the creation. Your sense organs are part and parcel of the creation. Your ajnana, your ignorance, is part of the creation. Everything that exists within duality is part of the creation. You are not. Yourself is not part of the creation. You do not exist as an object in time and space. That's all been objectified. It's just like if you think of the dream, your being is not an object in the dream. It just isn't. You may take a body in the dream, and you have all kinds of relationships in the dream, and time and space are in the dream, but you're not an object in the dream. You're the very being from which the Maya dream has come. You're the Ishwara of the dream. It's your dream. You're the Ishwara of the dream. Even if you take a body in the dream, who you are is the Ishwara of the dream. You're the self of the dream. You're the self of every part of the dream. You're the self of all beings in the dream. So when we use the dream drishtanta as an illustration, we can kind of understand that. Yeah, I mean, what would happen if I wasn't, you know, free from the dream? What would happen when I wake up from the dream? What would happen? And that would be something. Yeah, but you know what happens? Nothing. Nothing happens. That is an amazing phenomenon. And if you can note that phenomenon, the phenomenon, when you wake up from the dream, even though the nama-rupas are gone, they're like the pot to the clay. Like the pot to the clay. Nothing happens to the clay. Nothing happens. And that's your experience also. This whole world is gone. It was complex. So many things were going on. I wake up, it's gone, nothing has happened. Not to me, not to anything. Because this has no independent reality. You can see it, experience it in the dream. It's one of the things Bhagavan gives. These drishtantas within our own experience that are so true or point to our situation here. In terms of this body, mind, sense organs, is likened to a dream character in the dream. It's just this body, mind, sense organs, this person here, is part of Ishwara's creation. So we call this Ishwara's creation, this one that comes from the self, is sustained by the self, resolves into the self. All of us are part and parcel of Ishwara's creation, and so that means all these body, mind, sense organs are maya, they're mitya, they have no independent being whatsoever. When they go, maybe you live to be, you know, 100 years, you have a really long life, or 80, 90 years, whatever, you have a really long life, and then when you die, you're dead. No, you're not dead. Nothing happens at all. You know, nothing happens to you, because yourself is the self in all beings. Now, if something happened to you, then something would happen to everybody. Somebody dies and everybody goes, nothing happens. There's no such experience. There's just a change of scenery. But there's nothing happens in terms of any essence, any essential being. So that relationship of myself, just myself as this body, mind, sense organs, you know, abiding, being able, having a mind that can take refuge in me, even for samsari, that's a wonderful thing. I teach this in the spiritual counseling class. I teach East-West spiritual counseling. It's mostly Vedanta and Jung. But I teach this because anybody can understand this. This is not Vedanta. Anybody can reach that inner sanctuary, you know. But Vedanta, the vision of the Upanishads is non-dual. That means that all of this, all of you, every vritti, every experience I have, is myself. Its essential nature is only me, and the nama rupas are infinitely varied. The vrittis are infinitely varied. The people are infinitely varied. The punya papa available to us, the extremes of the midpoint and then the extremes of dharma and adharma, all of the opposites are there to be experienced. Sometimes Ishwara, yeah, there's many names for Ishwara. Now, when I'm saying all these opposites are available to us to be experienced, I'm talking right now about especially Punya and Papa. Ishwara is called Janardana. Janardana is the one who punishes the people. And then in the commentary, Shankara's commentary for Janardana, the one who punishes the adharmis and rewards the dharmis. This is all in Maya. This is all Maya. You know, if your behavior, the way in your value system is in line with Ishwara, you're protected So within the samsara, within Hinduism, they may not talk about it so within certain a lot of philosophical depth, but everybody kind of understands this, that it's very important for me to follow the all of the values of Ishwara, to follow Dharma. If I follow Dharma, Bhagavan will protect me because I'm in line with Ishwara. If I don't, I immediately start becoming uncomfortable on every level, to whatever degree you move to into a Dharma where there's himsa, injury of other beings, where in a positive way there's a lack of kindness, or in this overarching Dharma, do unto others as you would have done to yourself, and don't do to others as you don't want done to yourself. That's the Hindu version of the golden rule. They give both sides of it. Every time you move away from that, even the slightest bit, there's a little correction that takes place. You know? Bad. Bad girl. Something comes. You know? You feel it emotionally inside. Yeah. So the correction, the whole creation is continually training us and helping us in terms of Dharma and the Dharma. But when you get into more subtle realms, you have to understand that and how to be with those things, those hurts and pains that we've suffered for whatever reason, to get us back into that protection. Well, I hope this is making sense. So the gaining of this knowledge really fully requires the Upayanishta. The Upayanishta are those means that we utilize for Antakarna Shuddhi, because our mind, every part of it, is a product of Ajnanam, of self-ignorance. And so even the best that an Ajnani can do in the world, you could say, when he doesn't have knowledge, is to be committed to Dharma. Because being committed to Dharma is to be committed to Ishwara. Whether known or not, Dharma and Ishwara really go together. So your commitment to Dharma, if you treat all beings in all situations within Dharma, you know, then that aradhana, that worship of Ishwara, is naturally there. That's how it's operationalized. You know? And so for a dharmanishta, somebody within samsara, who is very committed to Dharma, they have an apekshika ananda. It means a relative ananda. You have to maintain it. It's an ananda that requires maintenance. But the maintenance is your commitment to Dharma over anything else. I really want this. Forget the Dharma just for a minute. It's not even like that for most of us. When there's a Dharma, you want the thing so bad that you don't think about Dharma or a Dharma. You just go for it, and some people get pushed to the side in the way, whatever. Yeah. So that retraining the mind for a Dharmanishta, they're brought up with that. They understand it within relativity, and they gain an Antakarna Shuddhi, a relative Antakarna Shuddhi, which is... makes the mind absolutely ripe for this knowledge. So if you give a dharmanishta is a mumukshu, becomes a mumukshu, they need not be a mumukshu, by the way. Just because you're a dharmanishta, totally committed to dharma in the way that you respond to the creation, that doesn't make you a mumukshu. Something else has to happen. Something that's beyond dharma. Something that's beyond that dual relationship of me and Bhagavan. The prayerful relationship between me and Ishwara, the devoted relationship between me and Ishwara. There is something beyond that, which has to do with who is the self of my Ishta Devata, and who is myself? Who is the self of Ishwara? Who is myself? There's something and sometimes in the Shastra they'll talk about it, the one who is a very devoted to the Ishta Devata, to their Ishta Devata, to the Ishta Devata. Who are you? You know, I want to know you. Who are you? Who are you really? Who am I? What is the truth of our relationship? You want to know more. And that's what makes a person, in whatever form that comes, that's what makes a person, you know, a mamukshu. The duality, the other problem with your ishta devata, they're not always there. I had a good friend who really, when she was younger, she insisted to Bhagavan that he come here and see me and talk to me. I want to see you. If you're there, you should come. You should come. Yeah. That's also very, not that uncommon. You know? That's, you know, the bhakti is there, but I want you to come and be here. Why won't you be? So we have a lifetime of assimilating Dharma, lifetimes, and taking birth after birth, going up and going down, going up and going down. But we're continually assimilating and learning not to put our hand in fire, you know. We're learning on subtler and subtler levels not to hurt ourselves by hurting another, right? So we learn and we learn and we learn and we learn and we learn, and there's still more to learn. You know, it goes on. It's just like a kind of like that flower unfolding, that it has so many petals. It starts to unfold, but then there's inside, there's all these little petals that are still, you know, you still haven't started because it's not their turn yet. You know, so it goes wonderful, like that, unfolding, unfolding. So the upaya nishtha of the gaining of this vision and the owning of it is the natural task. It's the natural task. Having self-knowledge, finding the sanctuary inside, recognizing that everything is Ishvara, you know, recognizing that the ananda that I seek in the life, the fullness, the wholeness, so that I can say, all is well with me, period. All of that, you know, we gain all of that through the Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. We see it and we know it. And then there's this incredible emotional lifetime, which is caused by beginningless births, you know, and in this birth itself, lots of variety of traumas, varieties of desires, varieties of hurts and pains and things that have not gone our way, and you know, scars that we have inside. There's a whole variety of them that we are committed to. That's kind of a harsh thing to say, but I think that it's true. We are committed to our suffering in some ways. And what I mean by that is that if somebody has really hurt me or done wrong to me, you know, then if I were to recover from that, then I'm letting them off the hook. I know it's kind of weird. It is weird. But it's there. This person or my family or my parents or my past partner or whatever, or something that's happened in the creation, a loss of a loved one, it can be so many things that have terribly hurt me, then for me to give up that hurt, you know, or to resolve that hurt, is to set the ones who have been responsible for that hurt, to set them free. And so the little one inside sometimes isn't willing to do that, because what they want is for the one who has hurt them to come and make it all better, which they're supposed to do. That's what's supposed to happen. Like, say if you're say if you had an angry parent or whatever, you had an angry parent who really, really hurt you, then what they're supposed to do, if they really love you and if everything is working in order, since nobody's perfect and hurts take place, then you're supposed to pick me up and say, "Oh, honey, I'm so hard. I'm sorry. You know, I love you so much. Oh, I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm sorry. I love you so much. I love you so much. I would never do anything to hurt you. You're the most important little one to you, the most important little girl in my whole life. There's no one more beautiful than you. There's no one more perfect than you. I would never hurt you on purpose. I'm so sorry. Mommy's sorry, honey. That's good, too. Mommy's sorry, honey. I love you so much. Don't worry. Something. You wait for that. The little one inside is waiting. You know. The little one inside waits. And nothing else is going to matter. That's not mommy coming and saying it's okay. Somebody says, that's not my mom. She has to come and say, no, that's not my dad. So whatever you are saying to me, no. Little one. Little one inside. It's very, very precious and something to be really understood. And that's why this inner child works in us is so important, because you go in. You go in and you can be and give what was supposed to be given. And these little ones sometimes are just waiting inside for that. But until they get exactly what they need to, it's like a key unlocking the door there. Until that happens, you know, they don't want to give it up. Because they want their parents to love them. You see what I mean? It's all very real in an internal way. So in this kind of instance, we need to know how to unlock those doors. Or how to cure those things, or we don't really aren't able to do it out here, because that hurt little child, these hurts that we're carrying inside that we haven't reached, we haven't found the magic key, you know, keep projecting onto somebody who raised their eyebrow in the wrong way, you know, or somebody who has hurt me in some way. It doesn't just deal with the mind out here, it goes all the way inside to that fundamental hurt that I'm not ready to let go of. And say, oh, it's all right, you know. Or just let it go. No. No. So this kind of stuff is going on in our psyche. And these are the things, when we talk about Antahkarana Shuddhi for us today in this era, all of these things, we have to understand all of this so we can go in and unlock those and release those hurts and take care of those little ones who are adamantly waiting, you know, to be released through somebody coming and doing the right thing, being the good mom or the good dad or whatever it is. All of these are all these things that we continue to learn how to unlock these locks so that I release myself from this emotional lag time, a lot of which is held in the unconscious. You think maybe that all your cruelties and your angers, like when you're mean to somebody or cruel to somebody or, you know, unkind or all this, you think that, no, I have a lot of work to do out here. No. You have a lot. You have things to do in here. There are things in here, not out here. It's not about out here. Sometimes you keep being mean to somebody. You're pushing somebody away. And it doesn't stop. It just goes on and on. Even though you make a resolve, I'm not going to treat that person like that anymore. It could go, especially in partnerships, unfortunately. It can be really common in partnerships. You keep going, keep going, keep going. It doesn't stop because you haven't gone to the core of the situation. So even though you don't want to, even though you have knowledge, this kind of abusive way of being can continue toward others out here. And we have to go inside for it. So this is... when we hold these two prongs, what I'm saying is this Upayanishtha is equal to this Upayanishtha in a sense. It's equal in a sense in that the psyche needs to fulfill itself. And these things have to be resolved or held in a way that is true to Dharma, that is true to kindness and all of that, in order for the mind to be open. Yeah. We can't bypass, you know, because the psyche won't let you. You can't meditate it away. You can't pranayama it away. Honestly. Meditation, yoga, pranayama. All of these things are so powerful. Puja. Puja's asking for Bhagavan to help you. That's the best. But they're band-aids. They're band-aids. And they can be very powerful band-aids also. They have learned certain pranayamas that almost take you to samadhi. Really, they're so very powerful. And you're just totally blissed out. Emma's done that for me several times. She always teaches me one or two. You know, every time I come, I learn one, two, or three different ones. And they take you into the state of profound meditation, profound absorption. But they are a band-aid. You know, you can use these devices, these tools, you know, to give you an upadhi, a body, mind, sense organs that will really help you, because it's healthy and it's strong and it's balanced. But if you're unkind to somebody, Bhagavan doesn't care about your pranayama. No? Not at all. You know what else? Bhagavan doesn't care about your jnana either. Mm-mm. You can do all of the prayers, all of the shravana, and have jnana-nishtha in terms of your self-recognition, but you don't have jnana-nishtha in terms of Ishvara. That's what we don't understand. That's why we have a lot of work to do. Your knowledge is there, my knowledge is there, but that I see and treat everybody as Bhagavan is not there. It's there more and more and more. It is relative growth, you know. With knowledge, just to be clear, more clear on this, as your mind thins out with its adharmas and its hurts inside, these adharmas or these actions you can dismiss. It's easier to sit to apologize. Easier to say you're sorry. It's easier to catch an adharma as it arises and let it go. That's shama, you know. It's much easier to do it and feel badly about it and then say, I'm so sorry, you know. That was not the right thing that I did. That was not the right thing. I don't want that, you know, and I don't want that between us at all, which we don't. Do you hate somebody? And it's just think of anybody that you hate or don't like. Oh, I'm just so glad I hate that person. It's such a pleasure. I mean, it's so much is not, you know. And so when we're gaining this knowledge, it's inside and outside. Outside is Ishvara, as though, which is only Brahman. And inside is Ishvara also, which is only Brahman, you know. Ishvara has no being apart from the self. Ishvara is not apart from you, from yourself at all. And so the one who is gaining knowledge is here, existing, walking around as an upadhi, as a jiva, within Ishvara. And so every direction that you look is only Ishvara, you know, and even inside and outside, wherever you look, is only Ishvara. That's the truth. And so, as long as that's the truth, all is well. But when you say, when you're walking around and getting, as a jnani, you're getting to walk around through Ishvara, to be Ishvara, to walk in Ishvara, to appreciate Ishvara, that's the truth. And as you gain nishtha in this knowledge, that's the truth for more and more periods of, longer and longer periods of time. And then the little head of the jiva rises up temporarily. It pops up, you know. It pops up because there's a desire. I want this so that I can be happy. There, the jiva's there immediately. That's it. Yeah. Then it becomes a non-binding desire, and you can enjoy that little spark of jivatvam because it's a non-binding desire. It's a non-binding desire because of your knowledge. Yeah. So, for this next 3 months, or this is what we're in for. Swamiji said, you know, at the end of his life, and he said to me privately for the last 10, 15 years, you know, he felt that he had taken in the first 20 years or more, 23 years, he had not emphasized Ishwara enough. Because for him, it was taken for granted. He didn't think of it like that. But actually, for the jiva who is existing within this creation in Kali Yuga, who just naturally, even if you're in the Satya Yuga, the first yuga, there's still so many desires, so many things, so many emotions. If you read the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, it all has to do with how to handle, you know, your likes and dislikes and your desires and the tremendous emotions that they cause. How to do all that? How to hold on to your dharma in the midst of this tumultuous creation? Even the Mahabharata, it's all a lesson. Ramayana, it's all a lesson. How to handle myself, my mind, my emotions in this creation within dharma, you know. And so Swamiji felt that he should have put much more emphasis in the teaching on Ishwara. He took some of that for granted in the last part of his life, probably the last 10 years or so. Time goes so fast. You think 40, 50, 60 years is something that isn't a promise. Mm. It goes really fast. 10 years is gone. Yeah. So in gaining this knowledge, it requires a lot of inner work too for this emotional lag time. The knowledge, your self-knowledge, takes the pressure off of that work in a way, because you recognize that the ananda that you seek is yourself, that there is nothing to be gained in this world. What to be gained is your helping others. That how I can help Vritti, that Swamiji's Vritti. It's helping others, it's contributing to the well-being of the world. That's all. That's the nice thing. That's what we can do. You know. But there's nothing to be gained in terms of your fullness or your happiness from an object. It's like your 15-second samadhi. That's all. You fulfill a desire, and for that moment, 15 seconds, I say, if you last 15 seconds, is good. That moment of samadhi, of well-being, of the mind being totally at peace, is there in those few moments of desirelessness that take place because you fulfilled the desire and then the next one hasn't arisen yet. That's your experience of sukha. It's coming from the fulfillment of desire. Later on, as we mature, it becomes from our commitment to dharma, you know, that gives that more long-lasting shanti. And then that also, though, is subject to maintenance. You become a maintenance man, one student said. He was a sadhu in the Ramakrishna Mission in San Francisco, and he said, I realized at some point, and he finally became a really serious student of Vedanta. So I realized I'm just an institutional maintenance man. Yeah. I mean, trying to maintain the dharma, you know. From the standpoint of yourself, there's no dharma, there's no adharma, there's not even any creation. The creation is just my expression. But the self has no eyes to see, no ears to hear, no hands or legs. I'm just the wholeness that it expresses in this beautiful mandala of the creation. And then we're all included in that mandala, these body, mind, sense organs. But the truth of it all is that self, which is absolutely whole, that abides in every one of us at all times as me, changeless me. So we have to gain this knowledge, and we have to gain it because we want it. We don't have to gain it. Most people, 99% of the people, don't want it. So we don't have to gain it, but we do because we want it. We need it, you know. But I'm just kind of stressing that the gain of this knowledge encompasses everything. That it's not me, Brahman. this one non-dual changeless self. It's the recognition that this is me. Completely me. You know, not somebody else. It is an expression of myself as is this body. But there's no difference there. And so the mind needs attention. So Swamiji said, you know, don't think I didn't work at this. Because he's also came from beginningless births, ajnanam-born births. He also had a very hard time growing up, too. He lost his father when he was 8 years old. He was the oldest son. You know, his mother was very strict. And he was kind of pushed around, not pushed around in a mean way, but these people took care of him, and these aunts and uncles took care of him. And, you know, and he was kind of a wild guy, a wild little boy. Yeah. That wasn't easy. At the end of his... And then a lot of things happened throughout, interesting dramas throughout his life. When you read the story of any of the avatars, they never have an easy time of it. They always go through all of these trials and tribulations, and the thing is, how did they survive? How did they do it? That's the message. So you can look at Swamiji's story and think, how did he go through all of that? How did he grow to be big enough to handle some of the things that he was put through? And he was put through a lot of difficult things. He says, yeah, I really worked for this knowledge. And to work for this knowledge means to see everything as Ishwara. And if you don't see it as Ishwara, it's the thing that you work on.
Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.